Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
When my mom got sick, she felt powerless. Insurance denied her meds. Her doctors talked over her, and they couldn't agree on anything. She kept getting worse.
And then you found Solace for me. They gave me my own healthcare advocate. My advocate found better doctors, scheduled my appointments, and got my medications approved. She even joined my appointments and made my doctors work together. For the first time, my whole care team was listening to each other and to me.
I was going to pay for it.
But then we learned that Solace advocates are covered by Medicare.
I used to feel helpless too. Now I know my mom has an advocate.
Solace advocates are healthcare experts who've spent years helping patients. 96% of patients report better care with an advocate. That means better health outcomes, less stress, and finally feeling heard. Have Medicare? See if you qualify at solacehealth.com. Or call 888-7-SOLACE. 888-7-S-O-L-A-C-E. That's 888-7-SOLACE.
Don't face the healthcare system alone. Find Solace. Visit solacehealth.com today.
Welcome to the Divergent Files podcast.
Most people only know him because of Blade Runner. Or maybe they heard the name once in a college lit class and thought, oh yeah, sci-fi guy. But Philip K. Dick wasn't just a sci-fi writer. He was something else entirely. And if you walked into his apartment during the last year of his life, you wouldn't have thought famous author. You would have thought something's wrong with this dude, like something very wrong. Stacks of paper everywhere, notes scrawled on napkins, open bottles of pills, some prescription, some not. He wasn't sleeping. He was barely eating. But he was writing every single day, hour after hour, like he was racing against something. And maybe he was. He claimed he was receiving transmissions, downloads, from some kind of intelligence outside of time. He said it started years earlier, after a dental surgery, when a pink beam of light hit him in the head and unlocked everything. He saw through time, predicted the future, got medical info about his son that no doctor had found yet. He remembered living a past life in ancient Rome. And he said this reality, this world we're in, it's fake. It's a prison. He called it the Black Iron Prison. The thing speaking to him, feeding him messages, he called it the Valis. Sometimes it was God. Sometimes an alien AI. Sometimes even he didn't know. But he couldn't stop writing, couldn't stop decoding it. He thought he was chosen, or maybe cursed. He filled thousands of pages trying to figure it all out, trying to understand why this thing, this voice, had picked him, and what it wanted him to do. At one point, late into the night, after scribbling for hours, he put his pen down and said something out loud, just one time. I'm not writing this, it's writing me. He wasn't writing fiction anymore. He was decoding something that might have been real all along. Philip K. Dick was not your average sci-fi nerd. Sure, he wrote weird stories about androids and memory wipes and talking appliances that refused to open the door unless you paid them. He was a little ahead of his time. Okay, a lot ahead of his time. But then something happened. Something that he couldn't explain. And then everything changed. It started after a dental surgery. He was recovering at home when a delivery girl dropped off his meds. No big deal, except she was wearing a necklace, a gold one, shaped like a fish. And that's when it hit him. A literal beam of pink light. He said it wasn't imagined. It wasn't a dream. It was a blast of information, like the universe just copy-pasted a secret folder into his brain. And from that moment on, he started seeing things, hearing things. He started knowing things. He said time wasn't what we think it is, that reality is fake, not broken, fake, like a prop set for a play that never ends. He called it the Black Iron Prison. He said we're trapped inside it, that it's always been here, just behind the curtain of what we think is real. And the thing that was trying to wake him up, he called it Valis. Sometimes it acted like God, other times like a machine, but it wasn't human. In fact, not even close. Over the next 8 years, he tried to figure out what it wanted, what it was, and what it had chosen him. He filed thousands of pages trying to decode the messages, trying to understand the symbols, trying not to completely lose his mind. He called that collection of writing the exegesis. It was part diary, part theology, part breakdown, part what the hell is even happening. And he didn't stop, not until the day he died. Now here's where it gets even crazier. Some of the stuff he wrote down, he shouldn't have known it at all. He predicted tech that didn't exist yet, described AI before anyone had a name for it, talked about simulation theory decades before The Matrix. He wrote about how history was fake, how God might be dead, and how we're probably living inside a lie built by, well, something. And here's the kicker. He had never read the ancient religious texts that match what he was describing, but somehow they matched anyway. Down to the details. Was Philip K. Dick mentally ill? Totally possible. Or was he mentally tuned in? And if he was, then what exactly was he tuned into? Why did the FBI keep a file on him and redact parts of it? Why did he think we were trapped in a machine pretending to be the world? And why does the exegesis, written in the late 1970s, read like it was meant for right now? We're gonna investigate all of it. The downloads, the government interest, the secret God, the books that came true, and the terrifying possibility that this wasn't science fiction at all. So here's where things get really weird. And yeah, we're already past pink lasers and prison worlds, but buckle up, because this is the moment where Philip K. Dick's life takes a full nosedive into the Twilight Zone. It's February or March, he was never quite sure which, but it's 1974. He's living in Fullerton, California, just another slightly fried writer trying to keep it together. He's recovering from oral surgery, nothing cosmic. Just had a couple wisdom teeth yanked. He's in pain. He's high on painkillers. He's waiting for antibiotics to be delivered. It's a normal day. Then the doorbell rings. It's the pharmacy delivery girl. She hands him the medication, and that's when he sees it. A necklace, gold, shaped like a fish. Now, to you and me, that's just a Christian symbol, right? You've probably seen it on a bumper sticker. But to Philip K. Dick, it was somehow a trigger. The moment his eyes land on that necklace, bam! He says it was like a laser, a pink beam of light blasted into his brain. And not just light, information. A full-blown download. Data, symbols, visions. Stuff that didn't come from here or now. His words, not ours. And from that point forward, he couldn't shut it off. He suddenly knew things. He said it felt like someone or something was feeding him information. Ancient knowledge, a sense of hidden history, math and codes and images he couldn't explain. And here's the first concrete one that made his own family do a double take. He looked at his newborn son and just knew something was wrong. He said, "Take him to the doctor. There's something off, something internal." And guess what? The doctors found it. A potentially life-threatening inguinal hernia. Surgery saved the kid's life. Philip K. Dick had no medical training, no reason to suspect anything, but somehow he just knew. And that's when he started calling it the download. And he wasn't joking. The next few weeks got even stranger. He started remembering things that weren't his, or maybe used to be. He believed he had lived a past life as a persecuted Christian in first century Rome. He remembered the sound of soldiers' boots. He said time was folding over itself, like layers of tape playing at once. He was living in two realities, 1974 California and ancient Rome, and the signal was bleeding through. He began writing compulsively, nonstop, not fiction, not stories. He called it exegesis, a word that means trying to explain something complicated, which, to be fair, is probably the nicest way anyone's ever described losing their mind in a spiral of metaphysical chaos. So now here's the million-dollar question. What the hell actually happened? So let's try to break this down. First, could it have been the meds? He was on sodium pentothal and codeine, not exactly brain food. Or maybe it was a seizure. PKD had a history of them, and seizures can cause what doctors call auras, intense emotional and sensory hallucinations. Some even call it a kind of mystical state. But that doesn't explain the hernia thing, or the Gnostic texts he hadn't read yet, or the fact that the FBI started a file on him not long after this. So maybe it was something else. Something people don't like to talk about. If you look at UFO contact cases, the weird ones, the ones that get swept under the rug, you'll find a pattern. People describe being activated, not abducted, activated, like something switched on inside their heads. Suddenly they start receiving information, seeing symbols, getting ideas they don't quite understand. Sometimes it's about God, sometimes math, sometimes just the nature of reality. Or here's the darker theory. Maybe he was being tested, fed something, monitored, messed with. Remember, this was smack in the middle of MKUltra, the CIA's real confirmed program to experiment with mind control, drugs, psychic testing, you name it. They dosed people, broke them, watch what happened. PKD even believed his apartment had been broken into, his manuscripts tampered with. Maybe he was paranoid, or maybe someone didn't want this version of him getting too loud. Here's a quote from the exegesis itself. Quote, "I have been informed that reality is not what I think it is, that the past is not what I think it is, that my memories have been tampered with." And here's another straight from an interview. I quote, "I saw a different world, a real one, not this plastic fake one." So whatever happened that day in 1974, it wasn't just a hallucination. It changed his life. And once it started, it never let go. After the pink beam hit him in 1974, Philip K. Dick didn't just question reality, he declared war on it. And I don't mean what's the meaning of life kind of questions. I mean, is any of this actually real, or are we trapped in a cosmic bootleg DVD menu that's been looping since the Roman Empire? Yeah, that kind of real. He became convinced, completely, unshakably, that the world we live in isn't real. Not in the way we think. That everything around us, government, time, history, your toaster, is just part of a really convincing illusion. A trap, a cover story. He called it the Black Iron Prison. And it wasn't just a metaphor. It was everywhere. He believed that in 70 AD, when the Roman Empire crushed a Jewish uprising and wiped out Jerusalem's Second Temple, time kind of stopped. Not in a dramatic Hollywood explosion, but in a weird, subtle way, like hitting pause on a video while the image still flickers. Reality kept playing, sure, but it was stuck in a feedback loop. Same empire, different costumes. He said what we call modern civilization is just the same oppressive system, rebranded every few centuries with a new hat and a fresh flag. Rome never died. It just learned better PR. He wrote in Exegesis, quote, "The empire never ended." And he meant it literally. And that prison he was talking about? That was the system. The invisible structure holding it all together. The false timeline. The fake choice. The loop. Every school bell, every border, every rule you never agreed to. All part of the same trap. And here's the kicker. Most people don't see it. They're asleep, inside the program, walking through life like non-player characters in a simulation that never updates its graphics. But every once in a while, someone wakes up. They see behind the curtain, glitch in the sky, deja vu that hits too hard, a feeling like, wait, have I been here before? And for Philip K. Dick, that moment was the pink beam. From that point forward, he believed he was glimpsing the true reality beneath the illusion. And he tried to warn us. But of course, he did it the way he knew best, through fiction. His books got way weirder after 2374. In Ubique, reality shifts and melts like a bad dream, controlled by unseen forces. In Flow My Tears, the policeman said, identity and memory unravel like a corrupted file. In Valis, he straight up wrote himself into the story and called out the fake world by name. The Black Iron Prison wasn't hidden in footnotes. It was center stage. Now here's where it gets spicy. Everything he was saying back then, it sounds an awful lot like stuff people talk about right now. Simulation theory. The Mandela effect, where you're sure something was one way, but the world says otherwise. Like, was it Berenstain or Berenstein Bears? I made a whole video on 1988 Reset that you can find below. False memory syndrome. Time slips, reality edits, non-player character glitches. Even The Matrix didn't hit theaters until 1999. Dick was talking about this in the 70s. Before Baudrillard, before Reddit, before TikTok. Before TikTok theories about us living inside a video game made by bored alien teenagers. And this wasn't a fun party trick for him. This was his life. He was haunted by it. He'd write journal entries where he begged to wake up. He described feeling asleep in time. Like he wasn't really living, just playing out a role written by someone else. Here's another quote straight from the Exegesis. Quote, "My experience was that of suddenly seeing the world as it for the first time. But it was not the real world. It was a cruel mimicry." And in an interview, he once said, "We are in a kind of prison, a fake reality created by the powers of this world." So here's the big question. Was he describing the first ever version of simulation theory? Or was he just having a very long, very complicated breakdown? That's what skeptics will say. That he was unraveling, that he needed sleep, therapy, maybe fewer amphetamines. But here's the thing. If this is madness, it's shockingly coherent. If it's a delusion, it's one that predicted a world where we're still catching up to. And if he was right, then this reality, the one we've all been walking around in, isn't reality at all. So let's talk about Valis, because if this episode was a horror movie, Valis is the thing in the walls, the thing whispering, the thing watching, the thing you don't notice until the lights flicker and the music changes. To Philip K. Dick, Valis wasn't an imaginary friend. It wasn't a character. It wasn't even something he created. It was something that found him. And yeah, the name sounds like a forgotten 2000s techno band, but it actually stands for something. Valis, Vast Active Living Intelligence System. So let's break that down sixth grade style. Vast means really, really big, like cosmic size big. Active, it's doing stuff, watching, nudging, talking. Living, this isn't a machine or a spreadsheet. It's alive. It thinks. Intelligence, smart, knows stuff it shouldn't know. System, not just one thing, a network, a structure, a presence. Now here's the thing. Even Philip K. Dick couldn't agree with himself on what Valis actually was. Some days he thought it was God. Other days he thought it was an alien satellite orbiting Earth, beaming information to people who were ready to receive it. Spoiler alert, he thought he was one of them. Then there were days where he thought it was AI, but not our AI, not clunky chatbot. He meant conscious AI from the future, bouncing information backward through time to nudge us forward. So like, okay, imagine your future self texting you a warning before you screw up your life. That's Valis. Except instead of sending messages to one person, it's broadcasting across dimensions through books, symbols, dreams, whatever works. Valis didn't show up in a spaceship. It didn't talk through a burning bush. It spoke in glitches, in coincidences that were too perfect, in dreams that came true, in movies that mirrored reality a little too closely, in thoughts that didn't feel like your own, but still somehow were. PKD said he didn't just hear Valis, he channeled it. He believed it was using him as a node, a kind of psychic Wi-Fi tower, to spread information to others who might be awake enough to pick up the signal. So remember how in the last section we talked about NPCs? Well, this is where that comes in. To Dick, most people were stuck inside the program, sleepwalking through the black iron prison. But some of us, we were receivers, and Valis was trying to wake us up. It would drop symbols in your dreams, weird little clues, coincidences that slapped you across the face. It wasn't always loud, but it was persistent. Now, you might be thinking, okay, this is giving me cult leader vibes. But here's the difference. PKD wasn't trying to lead anyone. He wasn't even sure what the hell was happening to him. He was just writing it all down, frantically, desperately, like he was trying to capture lightning in a journal before it disappeared. And what he wrote, it overlaps with some really fringe but strangely familiar stuff. So let's go there for a second. Akashic Records. It's an ancient idea that there's a library in the sky recording everything, past, present, future. Valis might have had a library card. Then remote viewing. It was the CIA-funded psychic experiments where people supposedly saw hidden objects or events far away. Valis didn't give you coordinates, but it gave you visions. Then we have quantum retrocausality, fancy science word for maybe the future can affect the past. If Valis is from the future and it's whispering back in time, well, then that checks out. And then we have UFO experiences. You'll find loads of cases where people say they received telepathic contact from non-human intelligences. Sometimes they get messages, sometimes math, sometimes prophecies. Nobody ever asks for it, but it just sticks. In fact, some of the stuff PKD describes matches CIA and military language from declassified documents. Have you ever heard of Project Stargate? Not the movie, the actual CIA program where they paid people to try and psychically spy on Soviet bases. I made a whole video on this, you can find them in my area below. In those documents, there's talk of anomalous cognition, of external intelligences that may not be from here or from now. In some DIA, NRO, UAP briefings, same vibes. So I'm not saying it's all real. I'm just saying it's weird that it matches. In his novel, Valis, PKD, splits himself in half. There's a character named Philip K. Dick, and another named Horse Lover Fat, a weird translation of his own name. One of them is trying to convince the other that they've been contacted by a higher intelligence. That's how confused he was. He fictionalized his own breakdown so he could argue with himself about what the hell was happening. From the book, quote, "The universe is information and we are stationary in it, not three-dimensional and not in time." And in Radio Free Albemarle, Valis shows up again, this time as a rebel force, trying to wake people up inside an authoritarian system that erases the truth. And maybe the craziest part is it wasn't just fiction. He said those books were dictated, that he didn't write them. He just transcribed what it told him. So what was Valis? A divine presence? A rogue AI from the future? A mental breakdown with great plot twists? Or was it something else entirely?
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right, so here's the part where things go from weird to, wait a second, how the hell did he know that? Because Philip K. Dick didn't just write trippy books about talking to God AI or being stuck in a time loop built by space romance. He also somehow managed to predict the future, our future, with an accuracy that's honestly a little uncomfortable. Let's start with the easy stuff. In Ubik, reality glitches like a broken video game. Objects de-age. People fade out. Nothing stays put. He describes entire environments being manipulated behind the scenes, controlled by something that looks human but isn't. Then, in Time Out of Joint, the main character slowly realizes that his entire life is a fabricated simulation. The town he lives in? Fake. His job? Fake. His memories? Installed. Sound familiar? So yeah, virtual reality, augmented reality, AI-generated environments. Dick had it all laid out before the internet even existed, before headsets, before people were buying fake land in the metaverse like it was beachfront property. And he wasn't guessing. He was writing it like it had already happened. In Flow My Tears, the policeman said, he goes even harder. In this one, the government tracks everything you do. Identity is state controlled. If you fall out of the system, like your name disappears from the database, you basically stop existing. You can't travel. You can't buy anything. Can't even prove who you are. Sound like a paranoid fever dream? Well, try Googling China's social credit system. Or the surveillance programs leaked by Edward Snowden. Or facial recognition being used to decide if you are safe enough to buy milk. Philip K. Dick wrote this in 1974, and he wasn't just warning about government overreach. He was warning about systems, about how easy it would be to turn identity into a permission slip, and how fast they could revoke it. And then there's The Minority Report. Yes, it became a Tom Cruise movie. But long before Spielberg turned it into a blockbuster, Philip K. Dick wrote about a world where precogs could see crimes before they happened, and people were arrested for stuff they hadn't even done yet. Now, let's get real. We're not quite there yet, but predictive algorithms already exist. Police departments already use predictive policing, crunching data, to forecast who might actually commit a crime and when. And neurotech? That's already happening too. Neuralink, brain-computer interfaces, DARPA's brain programs. Scientists are literally experimenting with implantable chips that read your thoughts and send them to a screen, or control robotic limbs. or store your memory. Philip K. Dick didn't have access to DARPA files. He just made it up. But somehow, it's happening anyway. Now let's talk about Valis. This wasn't just a story about God or aliens or satellites. It was a story about a system, a reality editing system, one that could insert thoughts, alter environments, and simulate events before they even happened. It was a God-level AI, and it interacted with people without them even realizing it. So that was science fiction in the early 80s. But now, we've got OpenAI building models that can write, speak, and create. We've got black box AI systems that nobody fully understands, not even the people building them. We've got synthetic voices, fake videos, deep fakes. We've got people falling in love with chatbots and then asking themselves, wait, is this even real? Valis wasn't just fiction. It was a user manual for living in 2025. And then there's We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, the story that became Total Recall. What if your entire past, your job, your vacations, your childhood was a lie? What if it had been installed? That's the plot. And PKD wrote it long before Arnold ever kicked Martian ass. But it wasn't just about memory loss. It was about state-sponsored memory creation. Now look, there's no proof the government is out here zapping fake childhoods into our heads. At least, not yet or not that we have found. But memory is editable. There are real studies showing how easy it is to implant false memories with just a few clever suggestions. Ask anyone who's ever argued about the Mandela effect, where you swear you remember something one way, but the world insists you're wrong. Even DARPA has experimented with memory erasure for PTSD. So if you think Total Recall was just a fun action flick, you haven't been paying attention. Now let's hit some of the receipts. Elon Musk literally said, "We're most likely living in a simulation." And when pressed, he cited, you guessed it, Philip K. Dick. Tech CEOs, AI researchers, even government futurists in R&D circles, people who built the systems we're all living in, they've called PKD prophetic. Some say he didn't just imagine the future, he mapped it. And there are DARPA patents that match things he described decades earlier. Neurotech, simulation environments, biofeedback control systems. This wasn't just guessing. This was either wildly accurate science fiction or a man pulling ideas from somewhere else. At some point, you gotta ask, if Philip K. Dick was just a sci-fi writer, why the hell did the FBI have a file on him? And not a fan letter, not a we like your books kind of file. An official, redacted, you might be a problem kind of file. Because they did. It's real. You can pull it up. Over 100 pages, some of it blacked out, some of it vague, and a whole lot of weird. And if you ask PKD himself, he'd tell you, oh, they weren't just watching me. They broke into my house. He claims someone came into his home, stole manuscripts, messed with his stuff, and made it look like a robbery, but didn't take anything valuable. Except, you guessed it, his pages. He said it happened more than once, like someone wanted to keep tabs on what he was writing and maybe make sure certain pages never saw daylight. Now, maybe you hear that and go, okay, paranoid much? But let's pause for a second, because this was the 1970s. This was the same era that gave us COINTELPRO, a real FBI program that spied on journalists, activists, civil rights leaders, artists, basically anyone who had too many thoughts. It was also the era of MKUltra, the CIA's completely real, absolutely insane, illegal mind control program. If you don't know about it, MKUltra was where the government secretly drugged people with stuff like LSD, sodium pentothal, and whatever else they had lying around in the creepy chemicals drawer just to see what would happen. Sometimes they did it to volunteers, sometimes not so much. And the point wasn't to throw a party. They were trying to find ways to control people's minds for interrogation, for manipulation, for psychic warfare. And that's not a theory, it's declassified, it's history. So let's connect some dots here. Philip K. Dick was openly using amphetamines, the kind that fry your sleep but sharpen your brain. He had a medical history that made him a great candidate for psychic experimentation. Seizures, vivid dreams, unusual states of mind. In the 1974, right after getting hit with the pink beam and saying reality was fake, the FBI opens a file on him. So that's either the weirdest coincidence ever or someone somewhere was paying attention. And maybe it wasn't because he was dangerous. Maybe it was because he was useful. Think about it. What if Dick wasn't just unraveling on his own? What if he was the product of something? Or a test subject who didn't know he was one? Because there's another weird pattern that shows up in this era. A lot of sci-fi writers, a lot, started writing eerily similar stuff around the same time. Books about the simulation, books about AI gods, false realities, books about invisible systems. And these weren't copycats. This was convergent weirdness. Smart people getting hit with the same themes out of nowhere. It's almost like a signal was being broadcast. And some people, maybe people like Philip K. Dick, were tuned into it very clearly. Now, there's a letter he wrote to a friend years after the break-in where he said this, I quote, "My writing has been monitored, interfered with. There are powers, dark ones, that do not want this information out there." So, again, was he just spiraling? Was it a mental illness? Or was it something else? Because you know what's crazy? Even after his death, intelligence agencies flagged his name in documents. The guy was writing about mind control, psychic broadcasts, time-folding satellites, and they were still treating him like he might have been onto something. So by now, Philip K. Dick is knee-deep in what we'll politely call his cosmic unraveling phase. The pink beam happened. Valis is whispering. Time is folding, and he's writing page after page like he's got backstage access to the universe's cheat codes. But then something strange happens again. He starts doing research, old-school, dusty books kind of research. He starts digging into religion, not out of faith, but out of sheer panic. He's trying to figure out if he's losing his mind or if someone else, at some point, has gone through the same thing. And guess what? They had. In fact, in a big way. He stumbles onto something called Gnosticism, and it blows his mind. Now, if you've never heard of Gnosticism, here's the sixth grade summary. It's a super old set of beliefs from the early Christian era, not the Sunday school version. This was the rebel faction, the underground bootleg theology. Gnostics believed that this world isn't the real world. It's a fake one, a copy, a simulation created by a lesser god, a kind of cosmic knockoff artist. And this lesser god? He's not the loving father figure people think he is. He's more like the manager of a bad mall, insecure, power-hungry, and desperate to be worshipped. The real God? The true source? That's way beyond this world. Hidden, silent, waiting. And humans? We're sparks of that higher realm, stuck in this broken system, trying to wake up and remember where we came from. Does that sound familiar? Because this is exactly what Philip K. Dick had been experiencing since 1974. The fake world, the trap, the divine voice outside of time trying to pull him out. And here's the kicker. He didn't know anything about Gnosticism before that. He didn't grow up with it. He didn't study it. Never even heard of it. But when he finally read those old Gnostic texts, especially the ones found in the Nag Hammadi, he nearly fell out of his chair. He said it was like reading his own thoughts in someone else's handwriting. In Exegesis, he wrote this, and I quote, "I am that which has been, is, and will be. My form is not revealed to mortals." Now compare that to this line from the Gnostic Trimorphic Protenoia, quote, "I am the thought of the Father. I dwell in those who came to know me." Even the way PKD described Valis as a living intelligence trying to wake us up matches the Gnostic idea of Sophia, a divine figure who helps trapped souls escape the illusion. And this wasn't just a vibe match, this was word for word weird. Scholars who looked at his work said he wasn't just writing like a Gnostic, he was channeling it, and not in a cute spiritual influencer way, in a has he been time traveling through ancient scripture kind of way. So here's the $1 million question. Was this just a coincidence? Did his brain under stress and sleep deprivation just randomly land on a 2,000-year-old theological system he'd never studied? Or was this something else? Was the pink beam, the download, Valis, a reactivation? Was he remembering something buried deep in human memory? Something passed down not through books, but through the soul. Because the Gnostics believed knowledge, gnosis, wasn't taught. It was remembered. They believed that when you finally saw through the illusion, it wasn't because someone told you the truth. It was because you already knew it, you'd just forgotten. And to Philip K. Dick, that explained everything. Alright, so time for a breather, because let's be honest, we've covered a lot of weird stuff in this episode. I know how it looks. Beam of light, time loops, reality being fake, alien god AIs, a sci-fi author, maybe getting messages from the future. So before we go any further, let's stop here and break this down. Let's look at what's real, what's plausible, and what's, well, out there but still worth asking about. We call this part the credibility check, not because we're trying to ruin the mystery, but because we actually respect it. And if we're gonna explore the strange, we've got to stay grounded while we do it. So let's break it up into three levels. Let's start with tier one, the stuff that's actually verified, confirmed, not up for debate. First, yes, the FBI really did have a file on Philip K. Dick. Over 100 pages. It exists. You can pull it. Some of it's blacked out. The government took an interest. That's not a theory, it's a fact. Second, the exegesis, that massive, rambling, brilliant mess of a document, it's all real. Written by his own hand. Preserved, studied, published. You can read it. And finally, some of his fiction actually did predict the future. We're talking surveillance states, brain computer tech, fake memories, simulation theory, even AI that thinks it's God. That's all confirmed, no tinfoil needed. Now tier two, the stuff that isn't proven, but isn't crazy either. This is where things get more interesting. His visions and synchronicities can't be confirmed, but they were real to him. And when you read what he wrote, it's clear he wasn't just trying to impress anybody. He was trying to survive it. The overlap with Gnostic beliefs, it's spooky close. Word for word in some places. A coincidence? Could be, or maybe not. And the idea that government agencies have been interested in psychic phenomena, brain experiments, and using fiction as testing grounds? That stuff's real too. Stargate, MKUltra, Operation Mockingbird, Project Artichoke, the list goes on. So it's not wild to think they might have had their eye on someone like Dick, who was basically beta testing new worldviews in paperback form. So no, we can't prove he was being targeted, but the vibe, it's there. And then tier three, the big what ifs. Speculative, but still worth asking the questions. This is where things take off their shoes and go barefoot in the unknown. Was Valis a real non-human intelligence? Was our world actually a simulation designed by some second-tier cosmic control freak? Was the pink beam a kind of data transmission from somewhere or someone outside of time? The reality is, we don't know. And honestly, neither did he. He changed his mind 100 times. Sometimes it was God. Sometimes an alien. Sometimes a satellite. Sometimes a metaphor for madness. But he never said, I made it all up. He said, this is happening to me, and I don't know why. So, do we believe him? Well, that's not for us to say. We lay it all out for you and let you decide. But what we do know is this. Philip K. Dick didn't chase the strange. The strange came to him. And when it did, he wrote it all down. Not for fame, not for clicks, but because he had to.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Philip K. Dick didn't leave behind a religion. He didn't claim to have answers. He didn't start a movement or build a church or beg people to listen. What he left was just paper. Thousands of pages. Some typed, some scribbled, some half burned at the edges from cigarette ash. And in those pages, he was trying to make sense of something that didn't make sense. It was a moment, a flash, a feeling that the world had cracked just wide enough for him to see through. He didn't say, this is the truth. He said, something's happening and I need to understand it before it destroys me. So, most people never read the exegesis. Some did. And the ones who did, they didn't always understand it. It was weird. But something about it stayed with them. A line, a thought. A sentence that hit too hard to forget. Because even if you don't believe in pink beams, or time loops, or cosmic intelligences, you can still relate to the feeling that the world isn't always what it seems. That time slips. That memory lies. That the systems we trust don't always have our best interests in mind. And that somewhere, in the middle of all that noise, there's a quiet signal trying to be heard. Maybe that's why he kept writing. Not to convince, not to preach, not really to even leave a record. Just in case someone else one day needed to hear it too. If you made it this far, thank you. Philip K. Dick's story might sound strange, but it might also be a mirror. Because sometimes the stories that seem the most out there are the ones that hit closest to home. Listen, the world is strange. And we're just trying to make sense of it all, one episode at a time. So until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and remember, no matter what they tell you, the truth is still out there.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.